Hi FM 101.9 megahertz of life.
A very good evening to you. Yesterday afternoon, just before Shabbat, our community attention turned to Glen Hazel, where two suspicious devices were discovered near Kosher World. The community security organization, the CSO, was alerted at round about 3 p.m. and immediately dispatched teams to investigate alongside the SAPS bomb squad. The area was cordoned off. One of the devices was safely disrupted in line of with the protocol, and the scene was later declared safe. Thankfully, no explosives materials were found, and the community could head into Shabbat reassured that it was under control. To discuss what happened, how the CSO handled the incident, what lessons can be learned, we are joined now by Liron Sanders. He is the CEO of the Community Security Organization. Liron, I don't think I'd be seeing you this evening.
I also didn't think I'd be here, to be honest.
Yeah, well, here we are. Either way, what was very clear to me is that there's a tremendous amount of concern. We live in a world where obviously these things happen. We worry about them all the time. CSO is constantly training, making us aware, preparing us for an event like this. But when it happens, it's always a little bit different. Can you walk us through the events of yesterday? How did the CSO first become aware of the suspicious devices, and what the immediate response was?
100%. So I think just to touch on the training and warning of the community, we've obviously been doing a big outreach to the community in terms of awareness. It's every time I come on here, it's what I speak about. Mm-hmm. And I'm grateful that we've done that, because that's what led to such a successful result in my mind yesterday.
Okay.
And when we talk to the training, we train our teams constantly for situations like this. So seeing the team operate on the ground, being on the ground with the team, was truly remarkable to see how quickly and effectively our teams put training into full practice mode, or full real life mode for that matter.
Okay, before we carry on, I do want to invite our listeners to WhatsApp. Message us 061-895-1019. We will try and answer as many of your questions as we possibly can. Now walk us through, because you actually didn't answer that question.
I know. So what happened is just before 3 o'clock on Friday afternoon, mm-hmm. our control room was alerted to the fact that there are two suspicious devices in the near vicinity of Kosher World. How we became aware of those devices is a student was walking home whose parent happened to have done the CSO Protector course and is one of our protectors.
Shameless plug there.
And they were aware and they saw these devices, got home, told their mom.
How old is the student?
I have no idea. Probably 13. I could be wrong there. Right. As far as I know, she's quite young. And straight from there, our control room was notified. Our protectors who were at Kosher World and Yeshiva were sent to investigate while we simultaneously dispatched our response team. The teams on the ground saw that it was two suspicious devices. They immediately blocked off the road. As soon as our more senior responders arrived on scene and so forth, and more responders, we further expanded blocking off the road, evacuating the community out of Kosher World, closed Kosher World down, closed all the restaurants down, all the complexes in the near surroundings. Yep. We got the people out of their houses to a safe area, and slowly we started to push our bubbles out to make sure that there was a safe area around the device, and from there contacted the police, contacted other security
companies. The first priority was just to ensure that the area was completely protected.
100%. So,
and then you start moving it out accordingly.
100%. So what's the biggest risk with a device is that the device explodes or does something. So you want to clear the area, a safe area depending on the size, to make sure that there's no one in that near vicinity.
Is it a success or a concern that it was a student walking past who happened to notice it? In other words, you answer the question.
In my mind, it was a success.
Okay.
Why I say it was a success is, again, our community is switched on. They're aware. They know what's happening in their surroundings. Would I say it's a concern from a security perspective? Of course it's a concern, but in my mind, taking the vicinity away from the Kosher World installations, Yeshiva College, our security teams would have never pushed their bubbles out that far in a normal course of business in terms of their operating procedures. On a bigger event, maybe, but on a normal day-to-day, we wouldn't have, our protectors would have never gone out that far. So I don't think they would have maybe seen it unless it was early, early in the morning, which we know it wasn't.
Right. How do we know?
We know it wasn't.
Fine. Okay. I have said to Liron, I'm going to ask the questions. If he chooses not to answer them, because it's not in the interest of the community to answer them, I think that's absolutely acceptable. And just to be clear on that, one of our goals at Chai FM is to talk about things that are in the interest of the community. Not everything that is interesting to the community is necessarily in our own interest. And Liron, to be perfectly frank, the person slash people slash group slash whoever who planted these devices might well be listening.
100%. We never know who's listening. We know every time we put something out on social media, we send out a communication, we come on air, we know anyone can be listening. It's all open source information, and people can gather as much information as they want from open source places.
Right, and I think that is important. That is important. So am I getting okay? So quite a few questions coming through, but we will get to them as soon as we can. Okay, so obviously we're talking very, very loosely and quite happily about the word devices. What were these devices?
So I can't give you a direct answer because we don't know at this stage. What the devices looked like is they looked like they were two bombs.
Mm. Simple as that.
I don't want to say like you see in the movies, but it was quite literally like you see in the movies.
Well, I wouldn't have been surprised if the word boom wasn't written on it because it almost, having had seen the pictures which half of the community sent us and we're still going to send me and we're still going to come back to that, it really, in my mind, it looked very, very clearly like it was meant to be a bomb. Boom.
Yeah. So look, on my first sight of the devices, I thought there's no ways this has to be someone's like school project. But on closer inspection, you actually couldn't tell, and they were completely realistic. I mean, I'm sure they were realistic, To put it into context, if you go look up tubular bomb cartoon, that is exactly what it would look like. It was devices that had tubes and wires, and that's what we know.
Some people are having a problem with the link. I'm not really sure why. I'm getting lots and lots of messages from people who are messaging their questions to us. Really all you've got to do is listen on your radio, 101.9 Chai FM, or what you have to do is go to www.chaifm.com and hit the listen live button. But we are getting lots and lots of questions, so that means that most people are listening and don't seem to be having a problem with it. Interesting. I do want to check that, but in the meantime, please keep sending your questions. 061-895-1019. There is also a live stream on Facebook. So you can actually just go to Facebook and you can listen there. Just go to my Facebook, Howard Feldman, on Facebook, and you should be able to follow this there as well. All right, so let's talk about, we know what these devices, well, we don't know what they are, but we'll get to that. How long did it take for SAPS? What is the stage process? Is it normal SAPS? Is it the bomb squad? Who comes first? Take us through what happens in a situation like this.
So we notified SAPS, and because it falls within the Sandringham division, the Sandringham police sector vehicle arrived first on scene, and from thereafter, provincial gets notified, bomb squad gets notified, K9 gets notified. In terms of what time they arrive and who arrives first, it's anyone's guess, but systematically how it worked on Friday was the local police station arrived. There were then some detectives that arrived from the police station and various other police stations. Mm-hmm. Following that, the SAPS K9 unit arrived to sniff the devices. And then lastly, the SAPS bomb disposal and bomb squad arrived.
Okay, so, and how long did it take for them to then go through and investigate?
So the truth is the bomb squad was the key element to this, because they are the team who test the device officially, dispose of the device, remove the devices. They can take as long as they want. They're a very small team. But thankfully, from the time we were notified to the time that the scene was cleared was 3.5 hours, which was absolutely phenomenal in my mind.
Is that phenomenal?
In my mind, that is.
Look, I've never cleared a bomb before.
I've also never dealt with it, thankfully, before. Right. But in my mind,
we don't do this every Friday.
We don't do this. We try not to do this every Friday.
Yes.
In my mind, a 3.5 hour turnaround time is quite successful. Could it be quicker? Obviously, 100%. We'd always want it to become quicker, but I think a 3.5 hour turnaround time was very respectable for the work that was done.
How close is the cooperation between SAPS and the CSR?
So we work very closely on a police station basis level only. We believe our strength is in working with the police stations in our areas where the Jewish community is present. So what does that mean? We support stations who can support us in our mission. And mm-hmm. we focus on providing them as much resources as we can to help them do their job better. So we work very closely with all police stations in our areas.
Okay, and here's a question from one of the listeners. Why did the bomb disposal people detonate the suspect devices or device?
As far as I know, it's part of their protocol to safely, I don't want to say detonate, but safely, the word slipped my mind, this safely trigger one of the devices to test how serious it may or may not be.
And the other device?
So after they did a test on the first device, they deemed it safe to transport the second device for forensic analysis.
Okay, so that tells me that it was obviously worthy of forensic testing in the view of the bomb squad, SAPS, etc.
100%. From our understanding is the devices were made as devices. Did they contain explosives? It doesn't seem so. And I say doesn't seem so very, I put a lot of emphasis on that because we won't know exactly until we get that forensic analysis back completely. But from my understanding and speaking with the police on scene, it seems like there weren't explosives within the devices, but they were built as legitimate devices.
Right. What does an IED mean?
Improvised explosive device.
So, were these IEDs?
Yes.
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 Okay. What is the point of somebody / some persons / some organizations, whatever it would be, planting devices like this in the heart of the Jewish community?
I can't give you an exact answer because I'm not in their head. But if I were to think like they think.
What are the options?
In my mind, it's one of two things or one of three things. The first one would be to actually cause disruption through an explosive, which this wasn't the case, thankfully. The other two options in my mind is to create fear and panic within the community. And the other one would be to test security protocols, security response times, how people deal with the scene, etc., to monitor what was actually happening after the device is found.
Okay, a few people saying they also can't connect, but we are on Facebook Live as well. We're going to take some quick ads, and we'll be back with you straight after this. Hang 10. We'll be back.
IFM 101.9 megahertz of life.
It is 2016, not easy for me to say. You know, when I'm so used to saying, doing the morning show, it is not, it's not really, doesn't flow off my tongue. But either way, lots and lots of questions. Thank you, everybody. I really appreciate. Question here saying, does the CSO think that the bombs were therefore psychological, not warfare, but a psychological almost attack on the community?
I would say in some parts, yes. Honestly, yeah. Based on the results we've seen over the past 24 hours, I would say definitely. Do we want it to be that? Definitely not. I think we are way more resilient than anyone who tries.
We know that.
So my advice is not to read too much into it and let us do the investigating to understand exactly.
Okay. So what does that mean? Because that's really an important question. Where do we go from here? I mean, there's still a lot to talk about, so I'm not by any means wrapping up. I mean, I've got billions of questions. Our listeners clearly have. And I can tell you that being in shul today was interesting. Some of the theories, I tell you that, you know, you should have been there, because you would have really enjoyed some of it. Anyway.
Especially why I didn't come.
Fine, if that's really the reason. Okay, so the question is the question is how do we take it from here?
So from here, we are in contact with the SAPS to understand their investigation. They have promised us feedback along the way, and we'll hold them accountable to that. And then from our side, we are obviously going to try conduct our own understanding into the events. What happened? Is there any cameras outside our installations that we can try get some footage from? Is there a timeline we can build? And then from there, we'll start to summarize what we're understanding of the event and how our security procedures reacted to that event. But
we run a few people on Facebook Live want to see your pretty face, so you just turn a little bit to face the camera. There we go. There we go. This is when radio.
Now I'm going to be like turning my head to you.
I know it's fine. It's fine, but that's also okay. So you're going to go through an investigation. You're going to work with SAPS, obviously.
100%. So what's very important for me to stress is this is extremely serious, and we won't do anything to get in the way of the SAPS investigation. Right. It's very important. It's very important to know, and very important to give clarity to the community that we'll work alongside the police to make sure that the investigation is smooth and thorough. And I think it's an important time to note that there's lots of other security companies out there that have sniffer dogs.
Right.
And part of the law is that if you suspect a device on a scene to be explosive, it's not legal for any commercial security company allow their sniffer dog to sniff the device.
Wow.
So yesterday, thankfully, we had two partners, partner security companies there. One was CAP and another one we're not going to mention who, but they both brought their sniffer dogs, and based on the device, they said we have to wait for the police force. So we waited for the police team.
So that relationship as well, obviously, between CSO, between CAP, all of these relationships actually build an incredibly strong team and network within these areas.
100%. We weren't the only people on scene. There were so many different service providers on scene. I mean, from the station police to national police to the canine police, bomb squad.
Really was the place to be,
yeah,
eh?
I mean, I wouldn't want to have been there, but...
Well, I don't know. I feel a bit of FOMO right now.
Then there was us. There was CAP, another security company, as well as Hatsola was there in case of any disaster. Yeah. So the community really pulled out all the resources to be there to make sure it was given our focus.
Okay. I've got a gripe. Not with you. Leron looked very, first, very nervous. It's probably a first. But you and I were communicating quite closely yesterday in terms of what was happening, what could be put out to what was real information to be shared. Whilst this is happening, I was receiving updates from everybody. From everybody, everywhere. Some were made up, some were real, some were quite glorious in their imaginative text. But it's a real worry for me because often you're not in kind of close enough to a situation to see what was really going on. In this case, I was fairly close to it. And so much of the information we were getting, I was seeing, was rubbish. And that worried me. What was going on? Why?
So I can't give the answer to how speculation spread, images spread. Obviously, it's in the course of word of mouth. I mean, we've got an amazing community. If you want something out there.
No, but irritating community. It
will be out there. And I think what's very important to talk about in this is to trust where the information is coming from. So from my side, every time we send out a communication, we make sure to stamp it with the CSO at the bottom, or it's on our official letterhead, or it's a communication directly from myself. I think in situations like this, the best information is information coming from any service provider on the scene. So as long as you know that the CSO or another security company or the police are communicating from the scene, I would say that is taken as verified true information. But as information gets passed on, broken telephone happens, and I believe that's probably what happened yesterday.
Because like one of them I got, and I actually wanted to. By the way, if there should be no longer any issue with the live stream, so if you want to go and do that, but that's it is working normally right now. I just wanted to actually find you the one that that really, really pushed me right over the edge. Here we go. Please note that the bomb threat has been confirmed as a false alarm. Now, this was sent out like really quite early on in the afternoon. Security and authorities have fully checked the premises. There's no giant danger. Alt Phyllis and something are continuing as normal. Seriously. Now, I know that I received this whilst the bomb squad was still checking. I don't even think the first of that device had been detonated yet. And the bomb, this is a note, and this was, it says on the top, forwarded many times. Many, many times. Please note that the bomb threat has been confirmed as a false alarm. Now, this is potentially, I mean, we're laughing, but I'm quite angry about this because this could have put people's life in danger because this message went out to a lot of people. It's a false alarm. God forbid these devices were active and real. This could have caused death. Like, I don't know how else to say it. I don't know why I'm so worked up about this, but this irritates me.
I can understand. And the positive from our side is because we had such a secure area of such a secured bubble of the area in concern, that even if someone did try to come get close, they probably wouldn't have gotten close and we would have stopped them. But I understand where the frustration comes. And like I say, you got to stick to verified sources of information from people on the scene actively dealing with it.
Yeah. And I think that's a lesson. We're going to talk about the lessons. But that has to be a lesson. Yeah. Someone telling me here, that message that I've just read was posted to their street group, their family groups. These messages are really, really dangerous.
Yeah. So
Like, and I feel like you're not hearing me. I feel like you're not responding to this in the way that I need you to respond.
I need you to criticize
the people that are doing that.
But I'm not going to criticize our community.
Why?
It's not my responsibility
to do that.
It's my responsibility to keep them safe.
So this is not keeping them safe.
So, as I say, any communication from the CSO is verified.
Right. Okay. So let's I just want to go back to some of well let me ask you this. What are some of the lessons that the CSO could learn, the community should learn from this incident?
So I think if we talk about valuable lessons for the community and what we can take out is every time I've come on here and drilled awareness, you understand why now, and I will continue to drill awareness because we can never be too aware of our surroundings. Awareness of our surroundings and what gives you a gut feeling of something being uncomfortable could have potentially saved hundreds of lives yesterday.
Right.
So community awareness and not being afraid to call in the control room.
And this is something that we've spoken about so often.
My number one message.
Yes.
My number one message is don't be afraid to call us and be aware of your surroundings.
Mm.
That's the lesson, really.
Tell me the difference between fear and awareness.
Fear is you putting yourself so scared that you can't even see something suspicious in front of you.
Right.
And awareness is having control and understanding that putting yourself in the environment is part of life, and having a little bit of awareness can potentially save that life. It's a comfortable being slightly uncomfortable.
And awareness allows us to continue to live our lives with freedom and confidence, doesn't it?
100%.
Okay. You were saying about lessons?
So lessons, being aware and not being afraid to call into our control room. And then for you especially to trust verified sources of communication would be the other key lesson for the community. I think from a CSO perspective, the key lessons that we took out initially from this is the amazing response from our volunteers. As I say, when I come on here, we're a tiny, tiny, tiny office staff, and we had hundreds of volunteers out there yesterday. Volunteers who necessarily weren't qualified in a response team capability literally said, this is the time to step up, arrived there and said, what can I do? And we gave them responsibility. So the response from our volunteers and the response of their training and skills that we've taught them has been absolutely amazing. And that's really our key takeout lesson at this point.
What happened, you know, obviously this event was focused on the location of where the event is. We've all watched enough movies to know that, well, maybe this is a decoy. What was happening in terms of other shuls? You know, so obviously this was right alongside Yeshiva College. It was the primary concern there was that whole environment. But what happened in the rest of Johannesburg?
So I can't tell you the times offhand, but soon after we had identified the devices and we had secured the area, we had sent out a communication to all of our shul security team leader groups in ample enough time before Shabbos. I want to say it was before 4 o'clock, but let's say for safety of my knowledge, let's say it was at 4 o'clock. We contacted every shul security team leader to brief them on the situation and to give them security protocols, additional security protocols to implement for Shabbos over the weekend, which included getting to shul earlier, making sure thorough sweeps were being done, increasing your manpower on the ground, asking further protectors to step up, and that was carried on throughout Friday and today. In addition, we had multiple vehicles out on the road, both last night and today. And I think what we understood last night is when we finally closed out every single shul in Johannesburg, barring two outlying shuls, were searched by CSO trained protectors, And the two outlying shuls were protectors who might have not done the course, but have done some sort of awareness course to understand the security protocols of what to do, which is truly like it's outstanding.
You, I'm on a few different shul groups. Don't ask me why, but I just am. And I tell you that it made me incredibly proud to see a message from a rabbi or from that community to say, the shul has been swept clear, you know, clear. We are functioning as normal. To me, that was actually incredible because, it's not my job to think of the rest of that's what you guys do. But when I saw these messages coming through, I thought, wow. Like this made me so proud because that meant that we're not just focusing on one spot, but there's this broad care for every aspect of the community, and I thought that was unbelievable.
Yeah. So really, what we strive towards is our mission statement as a protecting Jewish life and the Jewish way of life. Just because there's two devices outside one of our installations, it doesn't mean the rest must close for Shabbos. It means the rest must definitely carry on.
Well, it nearly got me to shul last on Friday night. Normally, I'm like, no, I'm so tired. I was up at 4 this morning, but like last night, I was really inspired to go. Okay. A few people saying, just tuned in. Can you recap? You do the recap.
The recap is two devices were called into our control room that were suspicious around the Kosher World Yeshiva College area. Our teams were deployed. We secured the area. We worked thoroughly with SAPS Bomb Squad and other security and medical providers to make sure the area was safe. The bombs were cleared. What we understand looked like viable bombs, but that didn't have explosives in them. And one of them has been taken for forensic testing.
Okay. Here's one message. The truth is that the so-called leadership did not do a good job of informing the community. We should not be treated like children. Howard, you have a condescending attitude. Okay, that I can't argue with. I definitely have a condescending attitude. I don't think you need to respond to so-called leadership because that already tells me that this person has come into the conversation with a bad attitude. We're not doing bad attitude. We're not. We are not. Right. If there were, God forbid, explosives in the IED devices, would they have been able to detonate them before the roads were cordoned off?
I don't think I understand the question. Would the bomb squad be able to detonate
them?
No,
I think the bad actors.
The bad actors. So if it's the people who placed the devices, at this point we're unsure. Mm-hmm. Obviously, we have to wait for that forensic analysis to come back so we can understand how the device could have been triggered. So very importantly, we're not 100% certain at this stage. I wish we were. Mm. And if we were, I would tell you. But again, the device was taken for testing. They are pretty much identical to understand how they could have been triggered if it was viable in that perspective.
Tanya loves my condescending attitude, by the way. Thank you for that. Were there only two, and was there a search done in the area for more? Yeah, because there was this rumor that there was another one on Study Road.
So there were only two devices.
Okay.
As part of our protocol, we sent people to search the immediate area.
And that's what you were talking about in the beginning, where the bubbles, we start off
small around the device, and then we expand our bubbles going out. And we pushed quite far out. We had multiple vehicles on the road, and their protocol was to understand, is there any suspicious devices anywhere? And if they flagged any suspicious people, to speak to them to understand who they are, what they were doing here. It was very important for us to understand that everyone in the area or in the close vicinity of the area was known to be in the area, because if they weren't, well, then there's a problem.
Right. Lots of questions about cameras. I don't know what you are comfortable talking about, because there are a lot of cap cameras. There are cameras in the area, people's homes, etc.
There's a lot of cameras in the area, and there's a lot of teams doing investigations, and I don't have the answers as of yet. We've just come out of Shabbos, and hopefully in the next few days, maybe we'll pick up something on those cameras, but I can't confirm anything at this point in time.
Right. So how does this, well, someone's saying, do we have a suspicion as to who planted these devices?
No suspicion at this stage.
Can we start spreading some rumors? Because I feel like we need a good rumor.
I can't start spreading some rumors, but based on your earlier comment, I'm sure someone will start spreading some rumors.
Please don't. I don't want to be condescending or anything, but actually maybe a little bit. Maybe I do a little bit. All right. I am just looking at... Okay, it's actually very interesting, because a few people are saying, and actually I think this is a valid point. David is saying, where was all of this communication? There was a void of communication by CSO. So it's interesting, because I mean that comes from the same person. Now, there wasn't a void, but if you don't know where, if you aren't on one of these groups, then it's understandable that you think that there was no communication.
Yeah. So
can we just talk about that? Because maybe this is part of the problem.
Perfect. So I think just to clarify for anyone who is unsure, I think our first communication went out just after 3, could have been 3:15, and then we tried to communicate on the hour every hour thereafter. There was a communication just as Shabbos came in, and then about an hour and a half after Shabbos was in, we deemed it necessary to send out a further communication just to set any rumors abey with an official CSO communication. Where do you get the communications? Very simply, on our Facebook or Instagram page. I recommend following both of them. We post to our pages as well as on our stories during these incidents.
But that's not going to help.
That's not the key.
Because you don't know 100%. To look for those.
100%. And then what we've got is we've got a community WhatsApp update group. It is an admin-only group where we post all important updates around security, the CSO, what's happening in the CSO, what's happening within the Johannesburg community. What we have done is on our Facebook and Instagram, look for CSO Johannesburg or CSO Gauteng. The latest post you'll see on Facebook and on Instagram is how to join that WhatsApp group.
Okay, so that's what you need to do.
Yeah.
We need to make sure that our community has joined these WhatsApp groups.
Yep.
It's really, really, really important, because when that message went out yesterday, and I don't really remember exactly what time, we can check, on those groups, it said avoid Kosher World area. I can't remember exactly what it said, but basically that's all the information that you needed, that we needed at that point, is keep away from that area. We don't need more information. I know we like more information, but at that stage, all that needed to be known is keep away, and then the information followed.
Yeah.
Just for clarity, it's not a WhatsApp group that you just click join and you've joined.
So for clarity, just because of security reasons, we need to verify every single person who joins that WhatsApp group. So every single person who requests to join that WhatsApp group goes through a verification where we make sure we kind of know who you are, we know your number, we know your email address, and then you'll be verified to put on that group. So if you go to our Facebook or our Instagram, there's a Google form, if I'm not mistaken. Go there, fill in your details, and our team will work through those registrations as fast as possible. It's our promise to you to work through that as quickly as possible as we possibly can to verify you. And as soon as you are verified, you'll be added to one of the WhatsApp groups for communication.
Okay. So because I can't tell you how many people here are actually now saying, but how do I join those groups? Go to the CSO Facebook page. Go to
Instagram.
Instagram, and there will be a link. There will be a link there. I'm just looking at a message. I'm not really.
I'll add while you're looking at the message. Yes. What's very important, just so that everyone understands, and for all of those listening tonight, the communications we'll post on that WhatsApp group or on our Facebook or on our Instagram are very limited during an active incident. We try to limit the information as much as possible to stop the worrying and to stop the panic and to ensure the community is calm and they understand what is happening. As soon as we understand the full story at the end of the event, we do our best to communicate as soon as possible with the full timeline of events so that everyone understands what actually happens or what's relevant for them to right. understand what happened. So during when something's happening, it's going to be short and concise messaging.
As it should be. You know, I think that you know, we live in, and I think we have to deal with this, is, and I'm speaking to myself just as much, is we live in an age of information. We need information. We've become, for good reason, or bad reason actually, but we've become information addicts because we have to know the latest thing that has been happening in Israel or here or there, and we're used to information. But we also have to accept that during an event, we need to know what's important for us to know.
100%.
And it goes back to what I was saying before, in the interest of the community and interesting. So it's interesting to know all of these things that we're talking about now, but at the time, it's in our interest to know, is it safe? Where do we go? What is happening? Are there protocols that we need to follow?
Yeah.
And yeah, if I am coming across as condescending, well, that's okay. The lack of information causes panic. It absolutely does. What about Lance saying the best way to get in the info loop? Yes, another shameless plug is go do the CSO course. Hold on. You know what? It's not for everybody, Lance. Some of us didn't get through that whole course, eh? With our knees and stuff. No, but seriously, it's a phenomenal course. And if you are inspired by or want to do something, get involved. Get involved. It's obviously it's not for everybody. I'm not suggesting that it is, but it's important. It's important to do so. A few of you sending me here. This was a message sent at 5:30 from the Yeshiva College Shul group. Yes, those messages that you are getting from those groups, Liron, as far as I understand, have been coordinated with the CSO.
Yeah. So what's
how did that work? Take me through that.
So what's very important is, for all of the shul security team leaders, we communicated with them to say that shul must go ahead and they must follow a set of security guidelines or security protocols to follow that may differ from previous Shabbos's or more detailed security procedures that they must follow. For any installations, in this case like Yeshiva College, where it is in such a close vicinity of the incident, we need to make a different decision. So that decision is, will this be done in time for shul? Won't it be done in time for shul? And what is the best protocol to follow? So myself and Greg, we liaised with the head of security for the Yeshiva College Shul campus to make a call. And I think we started that conversation at about 4:00 and I said, hold on for now. And at about 5:00, we spoke again and we said, listen, we don't want you to cancel shul because that just doesn't make sense. That's not protecting Jewish way of life. Can you make a plan to have shul not on the campus? And at that point, there was a decision made to not have shul on the campus and relocate the shul for Friday night. As soon as the device was dealt with and the roads were open, myself and Steve, the chairman of the CSO, walked to where Yeshiva College Shul was taking place to speak to various role players there to say, guys, it's been clear and you can go back to shul now if you want. I think it was 6:10 or 6:15. We literally said you can go back to your normal shul now if you want to, but tomorrow operate as per usual.
And today did, because the point is that, you know, that we could go. Is this a pivotal moment for Johannesburg or South African Jewry? Have we arrived at a point where that we weren't at on Thursday?
Yes, but if you ask me that question every day in the week, I probably will say yes for a different reason. I think every day our environment is constantly changing, and people ask me why I left accounts for security, and
it doesn't really make sense.
But the answer is it's a fast paced and a fast moving environment, and the environment changes.
Isn't?
No,
okay.
And the environment changes daily. Is this a serious incident? 100%. This is a serious incident, and we are taking it and treating it extremely seriously. Is it pivotable? Probably.
Pivotable, yeah. Right.
I would say so, but does it change how we operate? Absolutely not.
That was going to be my next question, is does it change? Does it? What does it mean? What does it mean to our community? Because there is nervousness around, and that's why we're sitting here at 8:45 on a Saturday night, instead of sort of doom scrolling on Instagram. But what does it mean for us? Should parents be more cautious about their kids walking back from school? Should we be? What does it mean for us?
So, for me personally, it means that every single day that we have trained and every single procedure that we have drilled at the CSO has proved to be effective, and we're very grateful for that, and it means we continue to operate like we operate. Does it change the level of how we operate? Sure, 100%, but this is why we exist and what we are here to do for the community. We are here to put ourselves on the front line to make sure the community can carry on as normal. So the question is, can the community carry on as normal? 100%, the community must carry on as normal, but with that heightened level of awareness that I keep speaking about.
Okay, a few people have just messaged, they've just joined. What happened yesterday afternoon, just before Shabbat, the community attention was turned to Glen Hazel, where two suspicious devices were discovered near Kosher World. The CSO was alerted around about 3:00, I think that's right, and immediately dispatched teams to investigate alongside the South African police bomb squad. The area was cordoned off. One of the devices was safely disrupted in line with a protocol, and the scene was later declared safe. Thankfully, no explosive materials were found, and the community could then head into Shabbat reassured that it was under control. We are chatting to the CEO of the CSO, Liron Sanders, as to how the incident was handled and how lessons can be drawn from this. We're going to go to ads. We'll be back with you just after this. Send us your questions, 0618951019. Thank you as well for your questions on Facebook Live. I'm going to come to those as well.
Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
It is 20:49. I'm Howard Feldman. This is your Morning Mayhem. It's 101.9. Hi FM, and we are chatting to Liron Sanders, and we are talking about the incident that happened yesterday. So looking at somebody, one of the messages is, how real was the rest of the device? In other words, there was no explosives, but how real was this device aside from that?
I would say 100% real.
100% real.
I couldn't go touch the device, obviously, to feel if it was paper rolls or steel rolls, etc. But from what I saw,
sorry, I said Morning Mayhem.
Yeah,
by
you
the
did.
Way.
So I didn't.
Why
want to
don't
correct
you tell
you.
Me? It's like, do you know how many? Craig's laughing at me. Doron wants to know if I'm drunk. No, I'm not drunk. It's just you talk about Morning Mayhem 3 hours a day, 5 days a week. All right, that's 15 hours. Cut me some slack here, guys. Sheesh, it's a tough crowd. You know, this is tougher than the Morning Mayhem crowd. And those aren't nice to me at all.
Maybe you need to move your show.
No, you're mad. Absolutely. All right. I'm sorry. You were busy talking about this device.
Was the device real? As far as we know, yes. Again, as far as close as I was willing to go to it, yes, it was. It was real.
Okay. Listen, that is you can't get more honest. I'm kind of hoping that you would actually kind of maybe just be a bit more gentle with us, but we have to know. I mean, the truth is that the community does have to know what is happening. Okay, from an operational standpoint, what did this incident reveal about CSO's readiness and communication systems? I'm talking internally.
I think it was very, I don't want to say it was a negative event, it was positive, but it was positive. Our procedures work, we drilled these procedures, our communication, thankfully, from what I understand, worked. We're very new at communication, as the community may be aware. Previously, we wouldn't have communicated like we communicated, but I think from a communication standpoint, it went well. From an operational standpoint, it went well. Overall, at this point, we obviously haven't unpacked it, and we haven't sat down around a round table and criticized each other of what we did right and what we did wrong.
Do you do that?
Yes, every single day.
Really?
Every day. Every day, every incident, because you learn from your failures.
No wonder I didn't make it through that course. I can't do that.
You learn from what you did wrong, and you only improve from that. So in every department within the CSO, we consistently give each other constructive feedback, whether it's an instructor, a person part of my office, a volunteer, a team leader, a function leader, a response leader, a response call. We all sit down, we understand the events of what happened, we see where we can do better, and we implement changes for the next time to make sure that we're always at the top of our game.
It's actually interesting because I was telling my son and my wife about this earlier. Is the one thing that I've learned and noticed with the CSO is you don't give yourselves and your teams that much credit. I mean, you do. You do because you expect a very high standard, and that's the ultimate credit. But you do very little patting on each other on the back, which is an interesting approach. Well, I don't know. Maybe
it's a scary approach, and until you're part of the system and you understand the benefits of it, most people think it's scary and they don't understand it. But everything we do, we discuss the positives and then we discuss the constructive. And it's very
important. What could you do?
And the way I say it is very, very important. We discuss constructive feedback. So I don't say someone they were bad at. I tell someone next time it would be better if you did this.
But you do focus on that.
Yes.
Huh? So at what point will you sit down with your teams and say, okay, guys, let's do an assessment of this. This is what worked. This is what we could have done better. This is how to change.
We do it after every major event, every major function, every incident like this, every response call, every missing person, every training session. Really, it's part of our culture and our nature to sit and do feedback.
Amazing. Absolutely. Absolutely amazing. And somebody listening in from Israel says this is exactly what they do after every event and mission in the army. So that's quite fascinating. Mike says, big shkarach to the CSO. Their openness and honesty has been amazing. It really builds real confidence. And Mike says, Baruch Hashem for these great answers. It shows an incredible amount of integrity. So, I mean, I'm assuming they're talking about you.
Maybe they're talking about you as well.
I've been accused of a lot of things, but never that. Right, I'm just looking at other messages. Okay, Karen says it's Saturday Night Live, not the Morning Mayhem. I like that. This is Saturday Night Live. I could get behind that. Okay, a couple of questions about awareness. We're going to wrap up in 5 minutes, so if you do have any more questions, just send them through. A couple of questions about awareness. Is there training for kids, for schools, and if not, should there be? I mean, because it's interesting that you identified a 13-year-old girl who I've now been told is a 12-year-old girl.
Sorry.
Yeah, I mean, really, Leon.
She should be 20.
Right, well, exactly. Is she going to get an award, by the way? Because I think she needs one.
Yes.
Good. Okay. I mean, I should have let you just answer the question before I answered it for you. But I think that's incredible that a 12-year-old girl walking home from school sees a device and she knows that it's important enough to report it to her mother, who takes her seriously enough to call it in. To me,
it's incredible.
That's huge.
It's incredible. It's incredible. It's really a testament to our community.
Yes, it is.
Really, really, really it is.
And to this family.
And to this family, yeah.
Okay.
So the question was, do we have training for kids, I think? I think that was the question for community. So yes, we have various different types of training at the CSO. Obviously, our primary focus and our primary training is that to qualify new CSO protectors into the CSO, which is quite a long course. And then obviously our normal training requirements for our current protectors to keep them active so that they can do what they do and what they did on Friday. But then we do run various different training initiatives for the community, from self-defense to awareness to kids Krav Maga to kids awareness, Barmy programs, etc. So we really have diversified our training programs over the past 3 years, I would say. We've had quite a large impact and outreach to the community. Obviously, we can always grow and be better, but if anyone's interested or they want to know, they can contact us and we'll recommend what we can recommend.
Okay, and then Dana asking, and I just want to find that, somebody who's not trained, what should they look out for? What do they call in? You know, you and I have had this conversation on air on the Morning Mayhem. I'm saying it now because that's when it was. Very, very often. And sometimes I always say, I make excuses for people. So I came to studio the one day and I told you the story. Mukundi and I walked in together and there were two guys sitting in a car. And I was going to call it in, and I thought, no, I'm sure maybe they're just waiting for... And I kind of explained it to myself, and then I said to Mukundi, should we call it in? And he says, well, no, I'm going to feel like a racist if I call it in. So we decided... this is like Matt and Jeff or Dumb and Dumber. But anyway, we did call it in. But then I discussed that with you because... You know, it feels sometimes weird. Like, you feel stupid sometimes calling it something in.
And that's probably the most important time to call it in. The answer is, you know your environment best, and anything that makes you feel uncomfortable or that you don't recognize is something that in my mind should be suspicious. If I use it as a home example, if you know where your coffee mugs are stored and all of a sudden your coffee mug that you use is in a different cupboard or on the dining room table or on the coffee table, that should be something concerning. Like, why would someone be using your coffee mug? It's the same as in the environment. If something shouldn't be where it is or doesn't look like it should be where it is, it's probably something suspicious, and that's what you need to be aware of.
So if it's out of place.
Anything out of place, or anything that makes your tummy rumble or feel like... There's that uncomfortable feeling you get in your stomach. I can't explain it, but everyone knows what I'm talking about.
And hopefully, the minute you're making excuses.
As soon as you try to justify.
That's my thing. If I'm now starting to justify why something, then that's what it is. We've got really 1 minute. The people asking, is it safe for our teenagers to walk around? Is that a concern for you?
If you're asking, is the environment safe?
Yeah, we don't know your teenager. Maybe it isn't safe for them. But it's got nothing to do with security.
Look, I do believe it's safe, but I think as parents, you need to have honest conversations with your kids of what the risks are. And now we're not just talking about potential terror; we're talking about crime as well.
Right.
So it's way broader than what we're discussing here specifically. But in general, is the environment safe? 100%. I've made the decision to live in South Africa, to grow my family in South Africa, 100%. And I think that should be something reassuring.
Okay, so I was going to say,
you guys should.
What is your message? Because we do need to wrap up. But what is your message for Johannesburg community following this event?
My message is to trust the CSO, trust our procedures, and trust our communication, and we promise to keep you as safe as possible.
And informed.
And informed.
absolutely perfectly, Ron Saunders. Well done to you. Well done to the CSR. I stand in awe of you, of the team, incredible team, incredible volunteers. I think that no amount of gratitude really is enough to you guys, to all of the other organizations that got involved, to Hatsola, to CAP, to everybody who just got there, got involved, and make sure that we are that we're safe. And of course, thank God, because I think we also need to be very, very grateful that we have somebody, you know, we've got the CSO on the ground, and we've got somebody else upstairs keeping an eye on this amazing, amazing community. It has gone at 9 o'clock. This has been a Saturday Night Live here on Chai FM. I'm Howard Feldman. Thank you for joining us. We will podcast this talk, and we will be able to share it with you probably within the next day or so. I'm Howard Feldman. Have a great evening. Shavua Tov.